ओम नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। रीडिंग फ्रॉम श्रीमद् भागवतम कैंटो 10 चैप्टर 72 एंटाइटल्ड द स्लेइंग ऑफ द डीमन जरासंध टेक्स्ट नंबर 20। यो नित्येन शरीरेण यो नित्येन शरीरेण सतां गेयं यशो ध्रुवम् सतां गेयं यशो ध्रुवम् नाचिनोति स्वयं कल्प नाचिनोति स्वयं कल्प सवाच्या सोच एव सः यो नित्येन शरीरेण सतां गेयं यशो ध्रुवम् नाचिनोति स्वयं कल्प सवाच्यु सोच एव सः यो नित्येन शरीरेण सतां गेयं यशो ध्रुवम् नाचिनोति स्वयं कल्प सवाच्या सोचे यः हु अनित्येन टेम्पररी शरीरेण विद द मटीरियल बॉडी सताम बाय सेंट्स गेयम टू बी ग्लोरिफाइड यशः फेम ध्रुवम परमनेंट ना अचिनोति डज नॉट अक्वायर स्वयं हिमसेल्फ कल्पः केपेबल सह ही वाच्यः कंटेम्प्टेबल सोच्यः पिटियेबल एव इंडीड सह ही ट्रांसलेशन ही इंडीड इज टू बी सेंसर्ड एंड पिटीड हु दो एबल टू डू सो फेल्स टू अचीव विथ हिज टेम्पररी बॉडी द लास्टिंग फेम ग्लोरिफाइड बाय ग्रेट सेंट्स. There is no purport to this. We'll read the next verse also. Text 21. Harishchandro Rantidevo Unchavritti Shibirbali Vyadaha Kapoto Bahavo Hi Adruvena Dhruvam Gataha. Translation. Harishchandra Rantidev Unchavritti Mudgal Shibi, Bali, the legendary hunter and pigeon, and many others have attained the permanent by means of the impermanent. Purport by the disciples of His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada. Here, Lord Krishna and the two Pandavas are pointing out to Jarasandha that one can use the temporary material body to achieve a permanent situation in life. Because Jarasandha was a materialist, they appealed to his natural instinct in the heavenly planets, where life lasts so long that appears to be permanent to the people on earth. Sridhar Swami briefly summarizes the history of the personalities mentioned in this verse. To pay off his debts to Vishwamitra, Harishchandra sold everything he had, including his wife and children. Yet even after attaining the status of a chandala, he did not become discouraged, and thus he went to heaven together with all the inhabitants of Ayodhya. Rantidev, after going without even water for 48 days, somehow obtained some food and water, but then some beggars came and he gave it all away to them. In this way, he attained Brahmaloka. Mudgal followed the practice of gathering grains left behind in the fields after the harvest. Yet still, he was hospitable towards uninvited guests. And even after his family had been suffering in poverty for 6 months, thus he also went to Brahmaloka. To protect a pigeon who had taken shelter of him, King Shibi gave his own flesh to a hawk and attained heaven. Bali Maharaj gave all of his property to Lord Hari when the Lord disguised himself as a dwarf Brahmin, Vamanadev. And so Bali gained the Lord's personal association. The pigeon and his mate gave their own flesh to a hunter as a show of hospitality. And thus they were taken to heaven in a celestial airplane. When the hunter understood their situation in the mode of goodness, he also became renounced, and thus he gave up hunting and went off to perform severe austerities. Because he was freed of all sins, after his body burned to death in a forest fire, he was elevated to heaven. Thus many personalities have attained enduring life on heavenly planets by means of the temporary material body. Om Agyanti Mirandasya Gyananjana Shalakaya Chakshuronmilitam Yena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha Shri Chaitanya Manobishtam Stapitam Yena Bhutale Swayam Rupa Kadamayam Dadati Swapadantikam Vandeham Shri Guru Shri Yutaha Padakamalam Shri Gurun Vaishnavamsya Shri Rupam Sagrajatam Sahagana Ragunatam Vitam Tam Sajivam Sadvaitam Savadutam Parijana Sahitam Krishna Chaitanya Devam Shri Radha Krishna Padan Sahagana Lalita Shri Vishakam Vitamsya He Krishna Karuna Sindhu Dina Bandho Jagatpate Gopesha Gopika Kanta Radha Kanta Namostute Tapta Kanchana Gaurangi Radhe Vrindavaneshwari Vrishabhanushte Devi Pranamami Hari Priye Vancha Kalpatarubhyascha Kripa Sindhubhyevacha Padidanam Pavanebhyo Vaishnavebhyo Namo Namaha Jai Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhar Srivasadi Gaur Bhaktavrinda Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Ramo Hare Ramo Rama Ramo Hare 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 Krishna. Just read the translations again. He indeed is to be censured and pitied, who though able to do so, fails to achieve with his temporary body the lasting fame glorified by great saints. Harishchandra, Rantidev, Unchavriti Mudgal, Shibi, Bali, the legendary hunter and pigeon, and many others have attained the permanent by means of the impermanent. Hare Krishna. So this section of the Srimad Bhagavatam that we are reading is an inspirational section where the examples that are being given are about great personalities. Even to be able to speak about these great personalities, it requires qualification. I'd like to seek blessings of all the devotees so that I can speak something apt. So, essentially, in this section, there is one thing that really comes out very strongly, that the Pandavas, throughout their exile period, they have been constantly looking for inspiration in their lives. So here, when we see that Krishna and the two Pandavas, Bhima and Arjun, are talking about the names of these great personalities and their sacrifices, it actually shows that the Pandavas have been meditating on the sacrifices of great personalities for them to be able to do great sacrifices in their lives. The 13 years of their exile, the Pandavas utilized it by associating with great saints, sadhus. So the Pandavas were constantly surrounded by saintly people, and naturally the saintly people would keep giving them examples of people in the history who have gone through similar situations like them. And in spite of lot of odds, they didn't allow their lower nature to prevail, and rather they took shelter of the higher nature. So essentially, we need inspiration and examples of people who have done something in the past to be able to get inspired. The world is full of inspirational books, inspirational literature, inspirational movies, just so that people today learn how to do something for a higher cause. Actually, the concept of sacrifice is a very touching concept. Therefore, so many movies made on the sacrifice of the soldiers, so many movies made on the sacrifice of the martyrs who sacrificed themselves for the country, so many movies made on sacrifice of one lover for his beloved, so on and so forth. So essentially, sacrifice is a very powerful theme in the world by itself. And naturally, for a human being who is struggling with his mind and senses, you need some inspiration to do something tangibly big and powerful. Something that the mind can't perceive as possible. Like for example, I was just traveling, I'd gone to Vrindavan with a small group of people for a yatra, and we were doing Govardhan Parikrama. And along with the group of people who were doing Govardhan Parikrama, we made sure they were 3-4 cycle rickshaws moving along. And the cycle rickshaw guys, we had told them to stay behind us. But somehow or other, they were walking parallel to us. So people, when they were walking, they were getting tired and they were looking at the cycle rickshaws. And so many people, just by looking at the cycle rickshaw, they would go and sit on it, Just because the cycle rickshaw is there, and it gives you inspiration to go and sit. So one middle-aged lady, she was exhausted at some point, went and sat on the cycle rickshaw. And as the cycle rickshaw was going ahead, at some point she saw one more lady, old lady, she must be like 75, and she was walking. As soon as this lady saw this old lady walking, she jumped off. If she can walk, I can surely walk. And then she did the whole parikrama walking, after that. So essentially, when we look at personalities who have done something inspirational out of their way, it becomes easier for us to do something out of our way. The concept of the here, 4-5 personalities, names that are mentioned over here, Harishchandra, Rantidev, Mudgal Rishi, these are all Shibi, Balim, and the hunter, the pigeon, sorry. They are all personalities who have done something very powerful in terms of sacrifice. Mudgal, the story of Mudgal Rishi again is told in the Mahabharata to the Pandavas during their exile period. And the explanation was that Mudgal Rishi was a sage who would eat only twice a month, on a full moon day, on a new moon day. There's only two times in a month that you would eat. And and he would beg, rather he would actually collect grains from the field, and whatever grains would be left out, you know, this is like a pigeon style of, you know, begging. You just collect grains that are left out, and he would cook that and he would eat. So he lived with his wife and family, son and daughter-in-law, and when he was in this situation, one time, Durvas Muni, he came to test Mudugal Rishi's patience. So he came dressed, disguised as a mendicant. And just before Mudugal Rishi was going to eat his meal, this, you know, mendicant came and asked for, you know, food. And Mudugal Rishi gave him a portion of what they had. And this mendicant kept telling, I'm more hungry, I'm more hungry, I'm more hungry, you know. Sometimes sadhus can be dangerously hungry, you know. And, you know, Durvas Muni ended up eating everything that Mudugal Rishi had. And then, exactly one fortnight later, before Mudugal Rishi was supposed to have his next meal, again Durvas Muni came, you know. So he kept coming like this 6 times. And all the 6 times, Mudugal Rishi gave away everything he had. And after seeing this kind of sacrifice of Mudugal Rishi and this kind of patience in not getting angry at such times, you know, generally it is easy for one to exhibit patience once. But if it happens every time, then it's called exploitation. Then we tend to feel, "Arey, ye kya ho raha hai?" You know, every time you're doing this. So generally, the trend in the scriptural understanding of what really patience is, or rather the mood of sacrifice is not tested once. It's tested multiple times to see if your consistency is there in maintaining the same mood. Therefore, sadhana bhakti is not about doing an activity once. It's about doing it constantly. So Mudugal Rishi was tested 6 times by Durvas Muni, and all the 6 times the same mood, and without even one tinge of, you know, going down in his attitude of giving, Mudugal Rishi kept giving. And after 6 times, Durvas Muni was really impressed, and he revealed his identity. And after Durvas Muni revealed his identity, the messengers from the heaven came to take Mudugal Rishi. They told him that, "You have done so much, we will definitely take you to the heavenly planets." So Mudugal Rishi immediately, he did not fall prey to the heavenly pleasure. So essentially, Mudugal Rishi was not doing sacrifice because he was going to get some higher pleasure. He asked the messengers from the heaven, "What is the benefit of going to heaven? What is the, you know, advantage?" And the messengers told him that he would enjoy all pleasures till his merit is exhausted. And once his merit is exhausted, then he had to come back. So Mudugal Rishi, he immediately denied the offer. He said, "I don't want to go." He said, "I want to go to a place where I never have to come back again." So he continued performing his tapasya, and he just did not go. Much later, there's another very interesting story of Mudugal Rishi about the mood that he attained actually. Instead of going to the heavenly planets, it's just being offered to him on a plate, you know. I mean, today, we all know we're trying to aspire to go to the spiritual world. But then, if an offer comes which is irresistible in between, so we may change our destination, you know. But Mudugal Rishi was very clear that this is what I wanted to attain, and he was not ready to change his destination at any cost. So, one time, Mudugal Rishi, he went to the, he was feeling very bad about the suffering that the living entities had to go through in hellish planets. So Mudugal Rishi actually went to the abode of Yamaraj to see what's happening over there. And as soon as the residents of the heavenly, of the hellish planet, they saw Mudugal Rishi, they became quite purified and they felt some momentary bliss in seeing Mudugal Rishi. So Yamaraj, he explained to Mudugal Rishi that this happened because Mudugal Rishi has been worshipping the Supreme Lord from so many lifetimes. And he said, when one chants the holy names of the Lord, Krishnaya Namaha, Vasudevaya Namaha, like that, just by the chanting, a person who is chanting the names of the Lord like this does not come under the jurisdiction of Yamaraj. When Mudgal Rishi was hearing this spoken by Yamaraj, all the residents of the hellish planet, they also heard this. And all of them started chanting Krishna's name. Krishnaya Namah, Vasudevaya Namah, like that, you know. So, as soon as the residents of the hellish planet started chanting the names of the Lord, all the devices in the hellish planet that used to work, you know, everything stopped working, you know. So the oil stopped boiling and the trees, the spikes start falling off. And it became like a proper Indian setup where things don't work properly, you know. Everything stopped working. So Yamaraj was bewildered. And seeing that everything stopped working, all the residents started chanting even more Krishna's names. And they kept chanting so much Krishna's names that the heaven became fragrant. Cool breezes started blowing over there. And everyone started hearing musical instruments. And eventually, seeing the purifying effect of the holy names of the Lord, practically all the residents of the hellish planet at that point of time, they were transported from the hell to higher planets. So essentially, Mudgal Rishi, and then before the residents of the hell left, Yamaraj personally washed the feet of all the residents of the hellish planets because they became so pure by chanting the holy names of the Lord. So, when there is a great personality who has done great amount of sacrifices with great amount of faith, just by seeing that personality, your faith increases. Just by seeing that personality, your desire to commit sacrifices increases. Harishchandra, again, is one such personality that is constantly referred in the scriptures. Not just scriptures, even in today's day-to-day affairs also, the name of Harishchandra is used, you know. If somebody speaks lot of truth today, they say, "Tum Harishchandra hai kya?" Of course, it is used in a wrong connotation today, you know. People don't expect you to speak the truth, and if you speak too much truth, they say, "What are you? You are Harishchandra or what?" But at least, technically, people know that if you are so apt at speaking the truth, that means you qualify to be like somebody like Harishchandra. That means at least some respect is there, you know, even in today's time and age. But what to speak of those times where they really had great appreciation for personalities like him. And therefore, Harishchandra's story is often quoted in many, many places in different scriptures to prove this point that truth holds much higher than anything else as a means of performing sacrifices. So, of course, the story also shows to prove that in order to be truthful, you need to be ready to make a lot of personal sacrifices in life. Those who are attached to their personal needs and comforts, they may not be able to hold the truth too much. And therefore you find in today's society also, anybody who stands by truth, that person doesn't live a very happy life. He lives a life of satisfaction, but not a life of happiness. So, Harishchandra's story is very apt in this regard. He was, one time, he was a great king, ruler of the entire world at some point. And he was, of course, in the same dynasty as Lord Ram, he was the ruler of Ayodhya. Vishwamitra one time, the great sage, he approached Harishchandra and he told him that I had a dream. In my dream, you promised to give me your entire kingdom. So he said, "Now you give me the kingdom," you know. I mean, quite weird. So in Vishwamitra's dream, Harishchandra promised, and he's coming and claiming for it. Today, if something has to happen like that, you know, everybody is dreaming too big, you know. So Vishwamitra, when he came to Harishchandra and asked him for the kingdom, Harishchandra, he just readily gave the entire kingdom to Vishwamitra and just walked out. And when he walked out of the whole kingdom with his wife and his son, after a certain amount, so there was only one place which didn't belong to Harishchandra, that was Varanasi. So he went over there and he started residing over there. So Vishwamitra came there also and he started telling him, "You have given me donation of a kingdom, but donation is not complete without giving some additional amount as Dakshina. You didn't give me Dakshina still, you know." So Harishchandra had nothing now. So Harishchandra had to sell his wife and son to give Dakshina to Vishwamitra. After selling his wife and son to a Brahmana, still there was some amount left. Vishwamitra wanted more. So, Harishchandra sold himself to a Chandala and he was working in a crematorium. And that way he paid off the debts to Vishwamitra. Vishwamitra went away. In the meanwhile, the three of them, Harishchandra, his wife and son, they were suffering like anything. And one day, while the son and his wife, they were working in this Brahmana's house, the son had to pluck some flowers and is bitten by a snake and he died. And his mother, she was carrying the body of the son to cremate. And she came to the same place where Harishchandra was working in the crematorium. And Harishchandra didn't recognize her at all. And she didn't recognize him at all because they look very different now. And so Harishchandra, when she came to offer the son for cremation, Harishchandra said, you have to pay this money for cremation. She said, I don't have anything. Harishchandra said, you sell your golden Mangalsutra and with that you cremate your son. That was when his wife realized that this has to be my husband. Because the wife had a benediction that her Mangalsutra will not be seen by anybody else except her husband. So the moment Harishchandra saw the Mangalsutra, he realized, this is my wife. And then the misery became even more because there was a clash between duty and emotions. So Harishchandra kept saying, I have to perform a duty. And the wife was, torn between her love for her husband and her respect for husband's duty. And finally, he asked his wife that she was to give something. So the only thing she had was a sari. So half of a sari she put on her son's dead body, and the rest of it she was giving it to Harishchandra as a, for the tax for cremating. And at that point of time, all the demigods, Indra, Lord Vishnu, all devatas, and including sage Vishwamitra, they came and started appreciating, glorifying Harishchandra for his perseverance and intensity. And they all brought his son back to life also. And they told him that, all the three of them, they have got place in the heavenly planets. And they offered the king place in the heavenly planets. And the king, he refused, saying that, I am a king, and unless all my subjects are qualified to go to the heavenly planets, I will not go. So the demigods, they said that, your subjects, they are doing their own religious duties. According to their duties, they will get higher planets. The king said, no, I am responsible. Till they go, I will not go. So then he offered all his pious credits to his subjects. And instantly everyone became qualified to go to the heavenly planets. And seeing his, greatness, and seeing the greatness of his sacrifice, all the demigods became really, really pleased with this personality. So the essential understanding of these stories, of course, is the story of Ranthidev, story of Bali Maharaj, the story of this hunter and this pigeon. There was a hunter who killed one pigeon. There was a couple, husband and wife. And hunter killed, the wife. And as he was going to take the body of the wife, it was a heavy rainy day and there was no place for the hunter to go, and he was, in a big trouble. He came another day in the same place under the same tree, and this pigeon saw that the hunter is suffering. And the hunter had taken shelter of the same tree which belonged to him. So the pigeon, seeing that he is my guest, he jumped into the fire, roasted himself for, the pleasure of the hunter. When the hunter saw the mood of these pigeons, his heart melted, and he actually developed this concept of sacrificing for a higher purpose, for the sake of others. So essentially, for doing lower things, no inspiration is needed. For doing something higher, inspiration is needed. And history is meant to learn how to be inspired by the right things. So when you take this concept of sacrifice higher and higher, it goes to another level. So when you perform sacrifices for your future pleasure, it leads to heavenly planets. That's what Krishna and the Pandavas are offering Jarasandha over here. Perform sacrifice now, you will get a heavenly planet in some time. When you perform sacrifices for the sake of others, you get satisfaction. And when you perform sacrifices for the sake of the Lord, you get bliss. So essentially here, by asking Jarasandha to sacrifice for his own pleasure, actually Krishna and the Pandavas are tricking him to sacrifice for the pleasure of Krishna, pleasure of the Lord. So essentially, Krishna says in the Gita, the concept of Bhoktaram Yagyatapasam Sarvaloka Maheshwaram Surudam Sarvabhutanam Gyatvamam Shanti Mrityati. So the way to aspire for peace is by sacrificing your needs for satisfying the needs of the Lord. So when you sacrifice your needs, your comforts for giving pleasure to the Lord, that leads to peace for yourself. So today the world is searching for peace, but they're trying to search for peace by satisfying their own needs. As long as you search for peace by trying to satisfy your own needs, there will be more needs created which will create agitation and not peace. But as soon as you try to satisfy the Lord and His needs, immediately the end effect of that is that you will get peace in your mind. So, this is the highest mood of Vrindavan. Why the residents of Vrindavan were able to be peaceful in spite of being in situations of greatest agitation is because they were constantly aspiring to satisfy the needs of the Lord. And if you look at all the pastimes Krishna performed in Vrindavan, every pastime of the Lord performing which was actually pushing His devotees to the limit were all pastimes to inspire, to show the world what it means to be sacrificing your needs for the sake of the Lord's needs. And therefore, the residents of Vrindavan were able to be peaceful in every situation of their life. Look at the Govardhan Leela. The whole concept of Govardhan Leela was sacrificing their opinions for the sake of pleasing the Lord. So the residents of Vrindavan sacrificed their opinions for the sake of giving pleasure to the Lord. There was a lot of agitation that came later, but Krishna held up the Govardhan Hill and they were very peaceful in spite of the agitation around them. So essentially, when you sacrifice your opinion to be in alignment with the Lord's opinion, to satisfy the needs of the Lord, you experience peace. The whole concept of Vatsraharan Leela, when Krishna took away the clothes of the gopis, so that shows how the gopis were ready to sacrifice their purity for the sake of Krishna's needs. So when they sacrifice their purity, when a woman sacrifices her purity, it's a very difficult thing for her on a mental level. Very difficult for her to, you know, open herself up. But when somebody does it for the sake of satisfying the needs of the Lord, then in that pastime, you'll find that the gopis found the greatest satisfaction because they realize that Krishna has accepted them as His wives. In when the Yajna Patnis were asked by Krishna to get, you know, food, prasad, for satisfying Him, the Yajna Patnis sacrificed their security for the sake of pleasing Krishna. So when the Yajna Patnis sacrificed their security for the sake of satisfying Krishna's needs, in that sacrificing their security, they found great peace because they realized that because we are surrendering ourselves to Krishna, when they came back, there was no fight at home. The husbands never fought with them. So essentially, they were worried that the peace at home will be destroyed if they do this sacrifice. But actually what happened was that when they did that sacrifice, when they sacrificed the security for the sake of satisfying Krishna's need, there was greater peace at home. And we find in the story of this, the coward boys, the gopas in Vrindavan, when they were in the middle of the forest fire, Krishna asked them to close their eyes. And by closing their eyes, what did they sacrifice? They sacrificed their ego that they can protect themselves. Generally, when you are in the middle of a forest fire or in the middle of any fire, you know, why do we have this whole concept of disaster management? The whole idea is that we protect ourselves somehow, get out from the fire. So the whole idea of trying to protect yourself from the fire is also connected to the whole concept of ego that I can protect myself. So here, when Krishna asked them to close their eyes when they were in the middle of the forest fire, the gopas, the boys, they sacrificed their ego. And by sacrificing their ego, they were able to close their eyes and experience peace in the middle of the forest fire. And we find in the story of the fruit seller who came to sell fruits in Vrindavan. Very beautiful pastime. And this pastime goes to another level actually, where the fruit seller sacrificed her livelihood. And by sacrificing her livelihood, she experienced actually peace when she tried to satisfy the needs of Krishna. This pastime on a little deeper level, you know, has a lot to offer us in our lives. So this fruit seller, she came from Mathura and she heard a lot about Krishna and Vrindavan. And she came selling her fruits every day. But one day, because she heard about Krishna and she wanted to sell fruits only to Krishna, as she was selling her fruits, she had bananas, mangoes, you know, apples, so many fruits she was selling. So instead of chanting the names of the fruits, she started chanting names of Krishna, Govinda, Damodar, Madhav, like that. So constantly she was roaming around, trying to sell her fruits. Instead of fruits, she started naming Krishna's pastimes. And that one day, she just couldn't find Krishna anywhere. She came another day, whole day she spent, she couldn't find Krishna anywhere. She came a third day and spent her whole day searching, and she decided, if I don't find Krishna today, and if Krishna doesn't accept my fruits, I'm going to leave my body in Vrindavan only. And then she, you know, and then finally Krishna saw her devotion and he decided to accept. And Krishna was sitting on Mother Yashoda's lap. And as soon as he heard his names being called, he just jumped up from Mother Yashoda's lap and started running towards the fruit seller. And while running out, he picked up a handful of rice and he ran out. And as he was running out of the office of Nanda Bhavan, you know, towards the fruit seller, all that grains of rice started falling on the ground here and there. And finally, when he reached the fruit seller, he came and stood in front of the fruit seller. The fruit seller, she was completely mesmerized seeing the beauty of Krishna. And Krishna said, "I want fruits." The fruit seller said, "What will you give in return for the fruits?" Krishna said, "I have grains." And he opened his hand, they were like just one or two grains, you know. The fruit seller said, "You have nothing to give me." Krishna got bewildered and the fruit seller said, "I will give you fruits on one condition, that you call me mother and you sit on my lap." Now Krishna was completely bewildered because, you know, she was from a, in one sense, from a lower class background, and, you know, he was in Nanda Bhavan, and, you know, everybody is going to look around. So Mother Yashoda, she told him not to talk to strangers. So he had a lot of thoughts in his mind. And he kept looking here and there to see if anybody is seeing. And when Krishna saw that nobody is seeing, he jumped on her lap. He said, "Mother," and he jumped out. He said, "Now give me fruits," you know. The fruit seller was so bewildered seeing this sweet exchange of Krishna. She lost her heart, literally. And she filled Krishna's hands with fruits. And ultimately, what remained in Krishna's hands, he couldn't hold much. Two mangoes and one banana. And Krishna took those fruits, started jumping, you know, like small children, and he walked into the palace of Nanda Bhavan. And this fruit seller just sat over there all day long. She was sitting over there, looking in the same direction in which Krishna ran. She just couldn't get up. And late in the evening, somebody came and told her that, you know, "What are you doing here, sitting here?" And then that's when she realized that, you know, the whole day has passed. And she got up, carried her basket, she was going towards the Yamuna River. She just didn't want to go home back. She just remained in Vrindavan. When she put her basket down, she saw there were unlimited precious jewels in that basket. And she was thinking, "What will I do with these jewels?" And she emptied her entire basket into the Yamuna River. Threw all the jewels, because she said, "I have got a greater jewel, the memory of Krishna loving her." And she actually remained in Vrindavan. She just roamed around. Someday, she just left her body in Vrindavan and went back to the eternal pastimes of Krishna in the spiritual world. So the fruit seller, in her attempt to sacrifice her livelihood for the sake of giving, satisfying the needs of Krishna, she attained eternal peace in her life. So here, this attempt of the Pandavas to tell Jarasandha these different stories of people who have sacrificed their lives, sacrificed for a higher cause, is an attempt to get Jarasandha to understand the mood of Vrindavan. The mood that when you sacrifice, when you make a sacrifice for the sake of pleasing Krishna, you will get peace in your life. Jarasandha has attacked Krishna 17 times. Even after 17 times attacking Krishna, he has still not got peace. Because he attacked Krishna, he associated with Krishna, not with the mood of sacrificing his needs for the sake of Krishna's needs. But he was trying to make Krishna sacrifice his needs for satisfying his own needs. And therefore here, the Pandavas are telling Jarasandha, today at least you sacrifice your needs for the sake of Krishna's needs. Krishna has come to you with a need. You sacrifice, look at all the list of people that have made sacrifices for a higher purpose and look what they have attained. And if you make a sacrifice today for the sake of satisfying Krishna's needs, you will get peace in your life. So essentially, every time the universe is created, Brahmaji is born from the Lord's navel. The Lord is trying to teach the world the same lesson. The lesson is that in the beginning of creation, when Brahma is born, as soon as Brahma is born, the first thing he does is thinks about his own needs. He's thinking, what is my duty over here? Who am I? What am I going to do here? And instantly, the moment Brahma is thinking about his needs, thinking about who he is, the first thing the Lord tells him is that, you do seva. You serve others by creating the universe. You serve others by sacrificing your needs for the sake of their needs. And as soon as the Lord engages Brahma in his service, and in the service of all others, Brahma immediately becomes peaceful because he understands the purpose of his existence. So in this world, there is a great need for peace. And the only way to achieve that peace is through the concept of sacrifice. When one dedicates his or her self-interest for the welfare of others, that is called sacrifice. So essentially, in this story, beyond what Jarasandha is being told by Bhima and Arjun, there is a very important concept that comes out also. The concept is that when we surrender to Krishna, Krishna is actively thinking about our welfare. We find that Bhima and Arjun in this entire episode, they are doing a mechanical role actually. They're just following Krishna. And Krishna is doing the role of thinking. What does it teach us? It teaches us a very important concept that when we surrender ourselves to Krishna, Krishna actively is thinking about our welfare. Krishna is actively trying to meditate and make plans for our welfare. And therefore, what does Bhima and Arjun do? They are not doing the thinking part. They are only doing the mechanical assisting of the Lord in His plan for our welfare. And that's what the story of Jarasandha Leela is. So, when we take shelter of Devim Prakriti, Mahatmanastu Maam Partha, Devim Prakritim Ashritaha. So, when we take shelter, Ashrita, when we take Ashray of Devi Prakriti, then Krishna actively plans for our welfare. So essentially, all the names that are mentioned over here, Harishchandra, Rantidev, Mudgal Rishi, Shibi Maharaj, Bali Maharaj, all of them, the pigeon, all of them were grahasthas, family people. And in spite of being family people, look at the amount of sacrifice that they are doing. They are not great sages. They are not like renounced people. They are family people who have the responsibility of the family, who have the responsibility of the kingdom, who have the responsibility of so many people who are depending on them. But just because we have responsibility of so many people depending on them, it doesn't mean that we have the rights to exploit and enjoy. But the more people depending on you means more sacrifice expected out of you. The whole concept of leadership is a concept of sacrifice. So if leaders are not inspiring enough to show by their example the importance of sacrifice, then they are not really leaders, but they are rather exploiters. So here we find in today's context, the political scenario, we find leaders who are thinking, how in my tenure I need to exploit the maximum. And here we find a list of leaders who are thinking, how in my tenure I can do maximum welfare for my people. And therefore, even after that tenure is over, they are not forgetting the welfare of their people. Harishchandra, he has finished his tenure. He is going back to the spiritual world. He is going back to the higher planets. And while going back to the higher planets, he is thinking, how am I going to take all my people with me? So that is a concept that the Pandavas are trying to show over here. So for grahasthas, the sacrifice their attachment to the world and for the pleasures of this world. And for brahmacharis, the sacrifice is studying the scriptures and serving others. So the whole concept of sacrifice means think beyond your needs. Think beyond your interests and think beyond your concerns. That's the meaning of sacrifice. So advancement comes when we sacrifice for a higher cause. We find in this Mahabharata the story of Barbaric, where there was this powerful personality named Barbaric who had this boon from Lord Shiva that he could finish off an entire army with just three arrows. So he was coming to join the war of Kurukshetra. And while he was on his way, Lord Krishna, he intervened. He came to know that Barbarik is coming. And he intervened. And when he intervened, he asked him, "Where are you going?" He said, "I'm going to join the war of Kurukshetra." So Barbarik, he said, Krishna asked him, "You don't have any weapons, you don't have any chariot, how you are going?" He said, "I have three arrows, enough." So Krishna asked him, he asked him before, "Three arrows, how can you fight? People will kill you in 1 minute." He said, "No, with these three arrows I can kill the entire army." And Krishna asked him, "How will you do it?" He said, "With one arrow I'll mark all the people I want to kill. With second arrow I will unmark all the people who want to save. And with third arrow I'll destroy all of them." So Krishna was bewildered, This is like almost like Photoshop, You mark something and you unmark something, So Krishna told him, "You show me how you can do it, And he said, Krishna came disguised as a Brahmana. And Krishna showed him a tree and he showed him, "You, with your arrows, you take out all the leaves of this tree and show me that you can do it, then I'll believe you." So Barbarik marked all the leaves of the tree with one arrow. And Krishna, in the meanwhile, he hid one leaf below his feet. And then with the third arrow he released, and all the leaves of the tree, this arrow kind of wound up, and then it came and stood below Krishna's feet. It was like hanging over there, So Barbarik said, "Do you have one leaf below your feet?" And then Krishna lifted that feet, and then that leaf also this arrow took out. And then Krishna, being impressed with his power, he asked him, "Which side are you going to join?" He said, "I'll join the weaker side." So in the beginning the Pandavas on the weaker side. And after some time, if Kauravas become weaker, he'll go and join there, So Krishna realized this was a very dangerous person, So Krishna asked him, "Please give me some charity." So he said, "Ask what you want." Krishna said, "Give me your head." This guy got completely bewildered, He never expected such a request. So Barbarik, he understood this is the Supreme Lord. He actually surrendered to Krishna, fell at his feet. And he requested him that, "I'll fulfill my promise, I'll give you my head. But please grant me the boon that I'll be able to see the entire battle." So Krishna, he cut off his head and he put his head on a stick. And he mounted the stick on top of a mountain. And the head of Barbarik saw the entire war. And after the whole war got over, Arjuna and all the Pandavas, they came up to meet Barbarik. And he was the only person who actually saw the whole war, because everybody was busy in small places. So they asked Barbarik, Arjuna was specially interested in knowing who is the man of the series, who really is the champion of the, Kurukshetra war. Bhima was enthusiastic, Arjuna was enthusiastic. Finally, Barbarik, he gave his verdict, after seeing the whole war. He said, "According to me, in the whole war, nobody fought on either side except Krishna. Krishna only was doing everything. And Krishna is the man of the series, So because Barbarik actually glorified Krishna so much, and because Barbarik, for the sake of Krishna's needs, he sacrificed his own needs. Therefore, Barbarik, he got two things which are considered to be the topmost you can get in a human life. First thing that Barbarik got was, he got the highest realization that a human being can get. That Krishna is the doer of everything. And everything in this world is purely Krishna's plan. And the second thing that happened as a result of Barbarik making the sacrifice was that eternally he is glorified as one of the greatest devotees of the Lord. In fact, in Rajasthan there is this temple known as Khatu Shyam, where the head of Barbarik is still worshipped. Most people who go to that temple and worship in that temple, they don't even understand the story. They don't have any background of this story. But even now the head of Barbarik is worshipped over there, and in fact he has got the name Shyam attached to his name, Khatu Shyam. He has got literally Krishna's name attached to his name forever. So essentially these are the two results of performing sacrifice for satisfying the needs of the Lord. One is you get the highest realizations possible in human birth, and the second is that you get glorified along with the Lord as a part of the eternal pastimes of the Lord. So essentially in this world, there are two people are squeezing a lemon into different glasses of water, and they add sugar, they add a pinch of salt, and they make a lemonade. They make a limbu juice, you know, lemon juice. No two people can make lemon juice which tastes exactly same. The reason is because there is an invisible element, there is an invisible factor that makes the difference. Difference between better and best. Ordinary and extraordinary. That invisible factor is the devotion in which it is done. And therefore, when sacrifice is done, not just for the sake of doing it, but with an element of devotion in it, the sacrifice becomes much more higher rated. Jarasandha at this point of time may not be able to do a sacrifice at that level as Barbaric has done. But because he's at least doing it for the right cause, the Pandavas are inspiring him. Someday you may reach there, but today you be at least at one level. And therefore they are inspiring him with the concept of heavenly planets. So essentially, the way in which the progress happens is that first there has to be knowledge, and knowledge leads to desire or Ichcha. Desire leads to endeavor, and endeavor leads to activity. So essentially, if you see anything and understand what it can do, that is the first level, that is knowledge. And the moment I see something, if I feel that I want to possess this, knowledge, it leads to desire to possess that thing. And after the desire to possess that thing, if I actually endeavor to get it, that is activity. So essentially, in this world, there are four things needed. The first thing that is needed is intelligence to know about the soul. The second thing that is needed is endeavor to do bhakti on the level of that knowledge, on the level of the intelligence that we are the Atma. And the third thing is, when we are putting that endeavor, there will be a lot of obstacles that will come. We need the patience to tolerate those obstacles when they come in on our path of bhakti. And such endeavor will lead to a result which is eternally glorifying. The Srimad Bhagavatam begins with a question by the sages. The question that the sages are trying to ask is, what is that thing, how to benefit the entire world? That's the question that the Bhagavatam begins with. So essentially, the whole purpose of the Bhagavatam and every story that is there in the Bhagavatam is, how individuals, when they perform actions, it will lead to great benefit individually and collectively. That's the purpose of the Srimad Bhagavatam. So here, the purpose of Krishna consciousness is being highlighted through a very interesting and a strategic story. The purpose of Krishna consciousness is to give. The entire world is doing a PhD on how to take. Sama, Dama, Danda, Beda. All management studies, all education is about how to take from this world. How to squeeze, how to exploit. And Srimad Bhagavatam, Krishna consciousness is like a kindergarten in how to give. So that means right from the beginning of spiritual life, right from the kindergarten of spiritual life, the knowledge that is taught is how to give. So, but the difference is that the world is doing a PhD on how to take, and Krishna consciousness is a kindergarten on how to give. The difference is that the education in the kindergarten is more satisfying than the education in the PhD. And therefore, the concept of Prabhupada is talking about the concept of the higher taste. What is the higher taste that Prabhupada is talking about? The higher taste that Prabhupada is talking about is in the higher taste in giving. When we give for Krishna, then there is great taste in our lives and great satisfaction in our lives. So Jarasandha here is being inspired by the Pandavas and being educated by the Pandavas in the kindergarten of giving. So in this spirit, probably we may learn something from what Jarasandha is trying to do eventually, satisfying the needs of Krishna and keeping our own needs aside. I would like to stop here. If there's anything I've spoken which is beyond my realizations, please forgive me. Is there anything that I've added to your lives in a small way? It'll be my great honor and pleasure. Thank you very much. Grantara Srimad Bhagavatam ki, Srila Prabhupada ki.